This is At The Turn. It's time for discussion and interviews about the world of golf you won't hear anywhere else. Here are your hosts, Nick Heidelberger and Joe Simons.
Hello, hello. Welcome into another episode of At The Turn. Nick and Joe with you, previewing the second men's major of the season. Nick's number one, the PGA Championship. Nick, how jacked are you for the PGA Championship? Oh, you're wearing your Beth Page black t-shirt.
I got my, I'm wearing my PGA gear. I did have to double check which week it was, but other than that, I couldn't be more excited for the PGA Championship. No, it's great. Golf is kind of at the, you know, more of the forefront of the sports world four times a year, and this is one of those weeks. So that's cool. You know, it's kind of like the PGA at Valhalla is about as stale as a major championship gets, but I'm jacked for it.
All of you, please stay tuned still, despite that ringing endorsement. We're once again going to play overrated, underrated, properly rated with PGA Championship. Before we get to any of it, please, a reminder to rate and review the podcast. Leave us 5 stars on either Apple or Spotify. Hit that. It's so easy to do. You can do it. Watch this. You should have already done it. Just in that little period right there, you've had enough time to hit the 5 stars, leave a review, or not. Just give us 5 stars. It's very much appreciated. Let's quickly run through the Handicap Report. It's brought to you by Blue Tees. Use promo code TURN at checkout for 10% off the best range finders in the game. Want to lower your handicap? Don't go to a swing coach. Don't buy new clubs. Get a range finder from Blue Tees using promo code TURN at checkout. Nick, for the second consecutive year, I am sad to report that I have ballooned to a double-digit handicap despite a very impressive final 11 holes at Eastmoreland Golf Course where I played 2 over. Unfortunately, I started...
They count all 18 of them. That's the problem.
I was 13 over through 7 holes.
Oh my gosh.
I started a triple, double, bogey, double, double. And it was pretty brutal, but thank God. Like, it got to a point where I'm like, holy shit, I'm not going to break 100 on this golf course today. And then fortunately, I calmed down. I hit my first green. I birdied the next hole. And then I made another birdie a little bit shortly after that and hung on.
So you still broke 90? There you go.
I did. And I felt really good. I actually played a really good back nine. Like, Eastmoreland is a hard-ass golf. It's probably the second hardest golf course in Portland. And the wind was blowing. And I putt good and hit the ball well. And even when I was making doubles, I didn't feel like I was doing anything too crazy. I was just adding up big numbers. Anyway, I'm up to a 10.2. I also played a fun tournament with my dad over the weekend, a KP shootout at Sahali. Sahali is a par 3 course, a course that I grew up on. I'm sure a lot of people did in the Clackamas County area. And it's $100 for every KP. And me and my dad, we're hitting the ball great. We're hanging in there, 2-man scramble format. We get to the shortest hole in the golf course. So the holes span from 70 yards all the way up to 200. So you get a wide swath of shots. The 70-yard par 3, 14th, my dad steps up there. He flies it into the hole. It bounces.
What?
It bounces.
No!
Out. Yes, it bounces out 20 feet away. He flew it into the cup.
Oh, my God.
And we were just all looking around like, did that just happen? And we all confirmed that we all saw the same thing.
Oh, my God.
Pretty amazing stuff. Yeah, he bunted a driver. My dad's 70. He bunted a driver in 18 to like 20 feet. It was one of the cooler shots I've seen. He lost that by about 6 inches.
Ugh.
But very, very fun time with the old man.
That sounds like a really fun tournament. You were talking about that last week.
Yeah.
And I meant to say, like, God, that sounds like so much fun.
It is. We played it a couple years ago, and I was able to get a KP, but I had to hit it to like, I think I hit it inside a foot from like 120 yards, and that was the only one. Like, there's 140 people in the tournament. You got to hit it close if you want to win. But it was a lot of fun. Sahali, good on you. That's the long version. The short version is I'm a 10.2, Nick. Sorry about that, bud.
It's all good. We're getting closer to our 7-stroke differential. I think I texted you over the week or middle of last week. My index dropped from 21.0 to 20.6.
Let's go.
Since then, it's dropped again to 20.0. I'm biting them off in chunks. And we still have a couple. I think we still have two like pretty high numbers on there that are going to come off if I do something decent. My last 6 rounds are among the 8 included in my index. So like it's going to be really hard to go up from in the next like couple months because all my latest scores are counting. So I've got some good momentum. We'll get it into the teens, presumably, the next time I play golf, hopefully. So I'm feeling pretty good. We're at 20.0.
I'm so
the best. I'm the best feeling 20.0 handicap in the country. I'll say that right now.
No, that's great. I actually don't feel terrible at all about being a 10.2. Like, I don't think I'm doing anything really that different. Just, you know, not getting the ball in the hole quickly enough. So a few more rounds before the Corner Club Open. Romy is furious listening to this podcast as my handicap continues to grow. And he thinks I'm a sandbagger more and more and more. But Nick, we're not here to discuss our own games. We're here to talk about professional golfers, the PGA of America, folks, not the Professional Golf Association. Two different PGAs. This is not the major of the PGA Tour. This is the major of the PGA of America. Did I get that right, Nick?
Yeah. Pretty close.
Oh, yeah? Well, correct me.
Yeah, the elevator pitch is the PGA Tour and the PGA of America are two different things.
Yeah.
In the PGA, it is still the Professional Golfers Association. So that's the thing. That's still what the PGA stands for. They used to be like the same thing, but then like the club pro guys kept getting pissed at Arnold Palmer and Jack for winning everything. So like, you guys need your own tour. We're gonna fold some polos and play a few times a year. You're gonna play every week and dominate. So let's kind of diverge. And so the PGA of America was like, this is great. You guys get your tour. We want the Ryder Cup and the PGA Championship. You can take everything else. And that's basically how it went down.
That's literally the best summation I've ever heard of the difference between the two. We're gonna fold some polos, play a couple times a year. I love it. That's great. Okay, well, now we're all schooled in what the PGA Championship is. This is the guys for folding polo shirts. It's their tournament, except they don't win it. I'm still with you. It makes sense. So, like we played for the Masters, we're once again, before we get to our outstanding picks, we're gonna play overrated, underrated, properly rated. We take something that is specific to this tournament and we discuss if it should be, if it is properly rated, overrated, underrated. So Nick, first one, you love to tout the PGA Championship, and you know, many do when it gets disparaged as the least important, least significant, least interesting major. People say, j'accuse. It is actually the toughest field in golf. Now, Nick, do you think that is overrated, underrated, or properly rated?
It's overrated. I mean, it's the thing the PGA hangs its hat on because, like, that's what it has, and that's good. It's the only all-professional field in golf, and people just kind of translate that to the toughest. It's not the toughest. The 20 club pro guys folding polos, no offense. I love them to death. We couldn't play this game without them. They're not as good as the 20 best amateur players in the world. Those college guys who get into the Masters, who get into the U.S. Open, they're better players. They're tougher to beat than the club pros for the most part. The top two or three club pros, sure, but like the field as a whole, it's probably not the toughest. That shtick is overrated. Don't stop doing it, PGA. It's what you got. It's good. People should know that your field is different than all the rest because it is the only all professional field. Although, I thought it would have been cool if the amateur who won, his name is Nick Dunlop, if he would have held on to his amateur status and used his exemption as a PGA Tour winner to get into the PGA Championship just to have amateur representation in this tournament, because it may never have the opportunity to happen again, or maybe like not in the next 50 years. That would have been pretty cool, but I think he had a little bit more to gain by turning professional. So anyways, long story short, that's overrated.
It is. I can't really think of a Stephen A. Smith like hot take, or like a Skip Bayless hot take about how this could be properly rated or underrated. There's no way that you can say guys that, I mean, never really sniff the cut, with the notable exception that we'll talk about later, are better than these amateur golfers. I mean, we're coming off a stretch in two consecutive weeks where 16-year-olds made cuts on the PGA Tour as amateurs. So they're getting younger, they're getting better. And if you were to take the, I don't know, round of 16 qualifiers from the U.S. amateur last year and put them against the field in the PGA Championship and put them in a tournament, I'm putting my money on the amateur half of that field.
That would be a cool ass event too, like a Ryder Cup style between like the top amateurs and the top pros in the game. Like USGA, PGA, schedule a Zoom meeting. Let's get that, because I would love to watch that.
Yeah, that would be a really fun idea. This next one, okay. I don't know how plugged in you were to this, Nick. I assume somewhat. Overrated, underrated, properly rated. Michael Block finishing tied for 15th in the 2013 PGA Championship. It was the story.
2023.
What did I say?
You said 2013. I mean, it feels like 11 years ago, but it feels like we've been watching him on our TV for 11 years, but it's just been one.
It truly does. Yes, Michael Block finishing T15 in 2023, played with Rory in the final round. He flew an ace into the hole. He had this incredible up and down on the 72nd hole, which got him into the field this year in the PGA Championship. He got a ton of exemptions into PGA Tour events over the course of 2023 and on the strength of this performance. Didn't make many cuts, if any, I don't think. But he's kind of become this weird celebrity. So, Nick, that performance and the juice he got from it, overrated, underrated, properly rated?
That's two different questions. That performance, underrated. The juice he got from it, probably overrated. The thing is, what he did is incredible. Like, just that week alone, it is underrated. It is truly remarkable. The even excellent player. Like, nobody's saying like he came out of nowhere. Like if you look at him, he's won his section championship. Like, I think he's like in the SoCal section, like a lot of good players down in Southern California. He's dominated the PGA circuit down there, but that's still a whole nother echelon than what he did at the PGA championship. So yes, he has some really good playing experience. He's done well in, this is what wasn't his first major. Still, it is underrated for any of these guys who have full-time jobs that isn't just to be great at golf to finish top 20 in a major. Now, I think the more people kind of learned about him, the more they kind of thought he was just kind of milking the system a little bit. Like, well, you're a professional golfer and you like had a good week. You know, should we really care? You know what? Maybe he did milk it. I don't blame him. Like, he did exactly what almost all of us would do anyways. So the performance, underrated. What he did after, probably properly rated, probably getting the flack he deserves, and probably doesn't care because he's much better off for it.
Yeah, I think it's all properly rated. Look, this is the end of it, right? This is the 15th minute of his 15 minutes of fame. Like, there's a life cycle to this. He got an exemption into the field for this PGA Championship on the strength of his previous performance at the PGA Championship. And I think this is where it all sort of comes to an end. Like, I see him in commercials for TaylorMade. You know, he's going on podcasts saying that if he drove the ball as far and straight as Rory did, he'd be one of the best players in the world. Like, all right, maybe technically that's true, because if you're starting from the best possible position on almost every hole, yeah, you're going to be a much better golfer than you are right now.
Yeah, but time out, like, how many people can say that? Like, there's a lot of people who, if they drove it like Rory, they'd be one of the best in the world. That's why Rory is one of the best in the world, because he does one of the hardest things better than everybody else.
Yeah, if Cameron Smith drove what Rory did, he'd win all four majors because he has the best short game and putter in the world. So, yeah, it's a pretty silly thing to say. I think his performance may have become sort of underrated at this point because of all of the post-tournament hype and flack that he's getting from social media circles and the backlash to his celebrity. I think we've sort of underrated that performance now a little bit, because it's remarkable. To finish top 15 in a major championship is pretty tough to do. That's not an easy thing, yeah, even for the best players in the world.
He had an ace playing with Rory. Like the video of him learning he was playing with Rory just seemed so staged. Like, whoa, I'm really playing with Rory. Oh my God, it's a dream come true. Like,
I know.
Whoa.
And then when he makes the ace, he like, clearly there's a different roar for an ace than there is a shot close to the hole. And he's like,
yes.
Did it go in? No way. No way did it go in. No. And it's like, Michael Block.
It's like he's never been around golf before. Like somebody just dragged, like, you should try this new sport, golf. Like, here, try these clubs. Like, try the one with a nine on it, you know? And it's like, yeah, like, he's completely oblivious. Like, he's playing it up a little bit. But you know what? That's his prerogative. He earned his spot in the field. He played well enough to get paired with Rory. He played well enough to be in a primetime TV pairing. Like, play your role, man. Like, if we all can do our part and get there, like if I could earn that spot, I could do whatever I want when I get there. So I guess enjoy it.
Does he make the cut this week?
No, he won't make the cut. He'll get plenty of airtime Thursday and Friday, though.
I'm sure he'll be on the set with the Golf Channel boys on one of the pre-games that they do this week.
Probably.
Okay, this one's
he'll be talking about getting texts from the members or getting a text from the assistant pro about the tee time booking platform going down. Oh, hold on, I gotta get Mr. Walter's tee time for 10-12. He's had it every week. He'll play that up.
I got lessons going on Sunday. I may have to cancel him I play good.
I forgot to cancel my lessons.
Oh, Blocky. Good luck, pal. Okay. Next one. Overrated, underrated, properly rated. That the PGA Championship used to be a match play tournament until 1958. Is that overrated, underrated, properly rated, Nick?
What do you think I'm going to say?
Underrated.
Underrated. It is underrated. And PGA, since I know you're listening, I've been speaking directly to you. Bring back the match play. The Dell is gone. There's no more match play. We crave match play. The best match play event in an individual format right now is on the LPGA at Shadow Creek. That's pretty cool if you ask me. If you're looking for a way to differentiate yourself, and don't look now, but the PGA or the Players Championship is coming for your spot as a major, you should probably switch to match play. More people would watch, period. Figure it out. Make it happen. It would bring back some excitement. You could tap into your history, into your roots. You could be something different without being crazy like Live Golf. I think it would be a really smart idea to go back to match play.
I think it would too. It's definitely underrated as far as I'm concerned. I looked at some of the scheduling that they used to have, Nick. So this used to start on Monday. They used to have Monday, Tuesday qualifying, and then match play Wednesday through Sunday. This used to be a week-long event. I don't think that's feasible now. But I think what you can do is have a 36-hole stroke play on Thursday and Friday. Keep it exactly the same. Then Saturday, you cut it down to the top 16. You get 16 guys exactly. And then you have the round of 16 Saturday morning, the quarter Saturday afternoon. The final four starts on Sunday morning, and you have your final on Sunday night. Now,
boom.
They're never going to do this, which is really unfortunate, because the reason they're never going to do it is because they say television coverage. If you get a stinker of a final, like say you get, I don't know, let's say Tom Hoagie versus Harris English in the final for the PGA Championship, that's not going to create any juice. And frankly, I think that's part of the reason why the PGA Tour match play event went away. I don't think they ever really had two studs going at it in the final. Oftentimes you would have two studs in the semis and one would inevitably lose because another guy got a hot putter. If you had a precedent of, like, I don't know, Rory versus Vijay or some kind of crazy matchup in the past for some finals that you can point to and say, look at how cool that was, then perhaps you'd have more chance of this happening. I just think there's no precedent for having an exciting match play final in the match play tournament, which is the only experience we have at the PGA Tour having match play this century. And as a result, I just don't think there's any incentive for them to take the risk, because there is a risk. If you have four guys that are very, very uninteresting in your match play foursome, your final four, no one's going to watch, and they don't want to risk that.
This is true. A few things. Number one, PGA gives out special exemptions into this tournament. They've given a few in the weeks leading up to this, so they can kind of stack the field with names they want to be in there. Number two, what did we say Michael Block did last year? T15. Oh, he would have been in your match play Sweet 16. That would be pretty sweet. Number three, you don't have to just make it the last, you know, the final two and the runners up. You can make the last eight guys play, bring a bigger gambling element into it, like partner with one of the casinos, and like you've got four matches on the final day that people are gambling on. And number four, out of all the majors, the PGA probably has the biggest agenda to push in terms of like what their organization is differentiating themselves from the PGA Tour. Match play brings a lot of commercials in, because when you get to those last few matches, there's just not a lot of golf going on. So they got plenty of opportunity to push their own brand, their own mission. They've got tons of charities and programs they've got going on, like they're heavily involved in Drive, Chip and Putt and all this thing. So it really kind of sets up perfectly for this tournament better than anything else.
Yeah, it it's just kind of a nothing burger a lot of the time. Like last year, you had a pretty exciting finish. You had Scotty, Victor, and Brooks Koepka all kind of down the stretch battling and got terrible ratings. No one gave a shit. I think part of it is because it happens in May and it kind of flies under the radar now as opposed to August. But you need something to differentiate it, and this would be it. I think like dying a slow death rather than taking a big risk and dying is like just so much worse, right? Take a chance, PGA of America. You're evaporating just by not making any sort of being risk adverse is so much worse than jumping out of an airplane. Like, yeah, your parachute's going to open most of the time, but maybe it won't. You know, like let's go nuts here. We got to do something, and it's just another tournament on another golf course with high rough. Like that's what it is. And
yeah, exactly.
They got to figure something out. Okay, a couple more. We did this for the Masters. Let's do it again here. Overrated, underrated, properly rated. Tiger Woods is in the field, Nick.
This will never be properly rated or overrated. It can only be underrated.
Okay.
Tiger is playing professional golf. Like, think about the things that his body has gone through. It's just yeah. It's just incredible. So, I mean, yeah, nothing else really needs to be said.
I'm going to go properly rated. I look, Tiger made the cut at the Masters, finished DFL. It's tough for the man to walk. I can't wait to see what happens. I was talking to my folks about this yesterday. Can't wait to see what happens when Tiger turns 50. The 2026 golf season is going to be a scene, man, because Tiger's going to get in a golf cart and he's going to go on the Champions Tour. I hope he like comes for Hale Irwin's, Bernhard Langer's, every record on the Champions Tour. I hope he freaking grinds away and tries to win like 10 times a year, wins the U.S. Senior Open. What could be more interesting than Tiger like trying to really dominate on the Champions Tour? Because he doesn't have to walk. He can literally drive a golf cart, and he will do that. I think he's going to have some interest in trying that, Nick.
It'll be interesting to see, because I'm not convinced he will use a cart, because he could use a cart right now. He could qualify for the ADA and easily use a golf cart. Now, nobody's going to be the man to tell Tiger Woods, a stitched back together Tiger Woods, that he can't use a golf cart when John Daly has done it.
Yeah, but the problem is he was so vocal against Casey Martin in the late 90s.
Yes.
On the Champions Tour, there's a differentiator, right? Real or imagine, once you turn 50, there's a different tour. He's still participating under the umbrella, even if it's majors. I know they're not technically run by the PGA Tour, but he's competing ostensibly against the PGA Tour when he's playing a major championship. So he won't take a cart, even if he's allowed to. But the Champions Tour is a different ball game. You have a lot of guys that are older, that have experienced injuries, and he never came out very, very publicly as a young man and said you shouldn't be riding a cart on the Champions Tour. Because he did that against PGA Tour players like Casey Martin, I think that is the reason he won't go back on his word. He's only got a year and a half to get there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying he would do it now. I'm just saying the precedent he's setting now makes me think that it's not a guarantee he'll do it on the Champions Tour. But we will see. It will be interesting.
And Tiger will be teeing it up this week at the PGA Tour. Last one, the Wanamaker Trophy. Overrated, underrated, properly rated. It's named for Rodman Wanamaker, who owned department stores. It's been awarded since 1916, Nick. This thing's over 100 years old. What do you think of this trophy?
I think it's underrated, and I'm going to tell you more about that on Nick Rules, actually.
Oh, what a tease. Stay tuned for that. I'm going to say underrated. It's the most, like the claret jug, maybe the most aesthetically pleasing, but this thing is enormous. No one looks like, okay, say what you want about the PGA Championship. You look so friggin' cool holding this thing over your head. It's just a giant cup that you get to hold up. It looks like a beautiful trophy. It just looks so, so good. I think it's underrated. I think visually, it might be the most impressive trophy in sports, short of the Stanley Cup.
It weighs 30 pounds.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's like it's like lifting like a bag of sand over your head.
All the adrenaline after winning, you know, a quote unquote major. You got to be excited. Okay. That's it for another edition of Overrated, Underrated, Properly Rated. We will see you for the U.S. Open. Okay, Nick. It's time to pick the PGA Championship winners. Now, you and Scottie Scheffler are both going for the Grand Slam. I don't know if you heard this, but Scottie Scheffler and his wife Meredith were expecting a child. I don't think there's been a more anticipated birth since Jesus Christ. Hopefully, everything went well. He's going to play, right? Like, there's no way he pulls out of the field. We're recording this on Monday, the day before it's released. The idea that he's going to pull out of this tournament is insane to me. But there's been, like, to this point, I'm sure by the time that you're listening to this, Scott is going to be on the grounds. We're going to know more information. But this has simultaneously been the most overrated, most overreported story with the least amount of information that I can remember.
Yeah, I mean,
tough to give a shit. I know. Trust me.
No, it's not that I don't give a shit. It's just, I don't think you can say there's no way he won't play. When somebody becomes a parent, when they have a child, you know, I don't care if you're Nick Heidelberg or Scottie Scheffler, golf is a different priority than it was before.
Sure.
And look, there's a case to be made that this is his job and he can really provide a lot for his family by going out and making the cut. There's also a lot of cases to be made that his time is better spent off at home. So we'll see. I think he'll play, but I don't think you can just say that there's no way he doesn't play because there is.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it'll be interesting to see. Well, let me ask you, not that you have the skill of Scottie Scheffler, no offense, but like
well-documented.
It's so impossible to predict how this could affect his play, right? I mean, there's just a million factors that go into it. Like, put aside the emotional impact of becoming a father for the first time, but like lack of sleep, your like you said, the priorities, just all the different things swirling around it, other family that wants to meet the new baby, like your interactions with them. Like, there's so much going on, and maybe that does impact you because you are predisposition to have that impact you. But it just seems like if you're the number one player in the world, all these other outside factors are constantly there's a barrage of them. They're hitting you constantly. So he has to be used to sort of distractions, but because this is such a specific and new distraction, it seems like, yes, because you're the number one player in the world, it shouldn't impact you because you're used to things impacting you. But this is a thing you've never experienced before, so it becomes tough to predict, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, and I wouldn't worry about his play. Scottie seems like the kind of guy who could show up without having touched a club in 4 weeks and be perfectly fine, like finish top five, if not win. I'm not worried about that. It's just a different kind of demands. Like, not only do you have a new baby, but like your wife also birthed this baby, and like she's in some pretty intense recovery herself. Like, that is extremely taxing, and there's a lot of recovery, and every situation is different, and like, their situation may be different. Like, maybe they have, you know, the more money you have, the more resources you have. They may have a night doula who maybe he hasn't lost a minute of sleep. Maybe they prefer not to do that and do it themselves. Maybe he hasn't slept in weeks. Like, that's all personal preference that we don't know. And there's all situational things that we don't know. That's why you really can't speculate.
I love it. I love it. Good stuff. Okay. Like last time, we're going to identify a dark horse, a contender, our favorite from the LIV Tour, and then who we think is going to win the 2024 PGA Championship. Nick, I'm going to start. You always start. I'm going to start.
Go ahead.
You ready? Here's my dark horse. He's won this year on the PGA Tour. He's German. He's at 110-1. Now, that is a dark horse. My guy has 7 top 25s this season. 3 top 10s. Like I said, a victory as well. Steven Yeager. My guy just lives on leaderboards this season. No pun intended. So even if you don't like him to win, maybe check out his top 20, his top 10. Like, I think he's like 14-1 to finish in the top 10. So something like that could be pretty tasty. Steven Yeager, the German.
Last year we had the block party. This year we got the Yeager bomb.
Love it.
I'm going with a guy who has performed well in majors. In fact, he finished T9 at the Masters this year. He's got a few top 10s this year. He's coming off a recent streak of just terrible, terrible play, which I think is good. I think you either need to be hot or really cold coming in. You can't be lukewarm coming into a major, because if you get too comfortable, you think you don't need to work on anything, and you just kind of putter out. But his Recent poor form should have his full attention. He should be grinding away. And Will Zalatoris at 65-1 wow. is my dark horse.
Yeah, that's... And when you say it's a good thing about his form not being good, it's certainly good in terms of his odds. Like, he was... Because I've been monitoring the PGA Championship numbers for a while. Willie Z was in, like, 20-1 and 22-1, like, a month ago. Like, after the Masters, when he played really well for a while, he was right there. Look, as long as he's healthy, he's going to compete. Like, that's just really all it comes down to with him. And 65-1? Yeah, that's tasty, buddy. I love that. Okay. Nick, I cheated. And instead of having extra people, I have less people than usual.
That's the reverse of, that's the opposite of cheating. It's like having a vanity cap.
So true. I don't need four picks. I'm sticking with three. This is a guy who I've been monitoring for a while. He's my contender and also my pick from LIV. Terrible start to the season. Just awful. Tied for 25th at Augusta. And he said that he was embarrassed by that performance and rededicated himself. He won the most recent LIV event. He is the defending PGA champion. You can't find him at this number now, but I got him at 20-1, five-time major champion, Brooks Koepka. You can get him at like 14-1. And Nick, I found an interesting stat because it occurred to me that Brooks has defended two major titles. And I thought, huh, I wonder where that, like, how many times Tiger has done that? How many times, like, Jack has done that? So if Brooks wins this week, he would have defended a major title for the third time in his career. Based on who I researched in the modern era, he already has the second most title defenses of a major championship. Jack, Arnie, Faldo, Watson, they only went back-to-back one time in their career. Tiger's done it four times. Brooks has done it twice. So a win this week for Brooks would not only give him six major championships, it would give him four PGA championships, which would be more than Tiger Woods. He'd still be short of Hagen. I think that's one short of Jack as well. But he'd also separate himself from the rest of the pack in defending a major championship. And I really think, certainly based on past performance, I think that really matters to Brooks. The fact that he is the current PGA champion, he was embarrassed by not playing well at the Masters, he won the LIV event in Singapore pretty convincingly. I think he won by three or four shots. And now he comes in again as one of the favorites winning his previous performance. That's what happened last year ahead of the Masters. Brooks had no form. He won the week before the Masters on LIV. Everyone's like, who gives a shit? It's LIV. And then it looked like he was going to run away with the Masters. Eventually he ceded to Rahm, but then he won the PGA the following major. I don't know if this is the week that Brooks wins, but I'd be shocked if he didn't contend.
Yeah, I think it's a great pick. I think with Brooks, he's one of the guys that recent form really doesn't matter because, like you said, it's more of an internal for him, like the title defense. Like, there needs to be that extra why, and he definitely has it. He's definitely got the game. I mean, when's the last time we had a five-time major champion who's still in the prime of their career?
Yeah, Tiger Woods. That's the answer. It's Tiger Woods. Yeah, pretty, I would just be so surprised if he just can't see him finishing like T37. Maybe I'm way wrong. And also it was a little bit before Brooks was Brooks, but when this tournament was held in Valhalla in 2014, he finished top 20. So he was in the field and he played pretty well. So it's not like the course doesn't suit him either. Mm-hmm. Okay, Nick,
I'm going to go LIV. And then I'll keep my contender for later. So my LIV guy, it's not Brooks, although you made a great argument. It's Jon Rahm. Before Scottie Scheffler just took a complete stranglehold on the top spot in the world, when Rahm, around the time right before he left for LIV and right when he first joined LIV, it was a ping pong between those two. It was who's the best player. Obviously, when you join LIV, your star fades. That's just the way that it goes. It's the way the system is set up. It's nothing against any of these guys. It's just the way that it goes. You know what you're signing on for. And Rahm has basically removed himself from that conversation. He only gets a few chances a year to prove that he still belongs there, that he still is one of the top guys. Obviously, whatever happens with Scotty, he's not going to be, even if he is there, even if he's playing well, It's still going to be a little bit different version of Scotty. This is going to be John Rahm's best chance to prove and really make a statement that he belongs in that conversation. So for that reason, he's my live guy.
It's just nuts to like look at John Rahm like at 19-1 or 22-1 and be like, how do I not take that? You know, it's like he's such a dominant force. The only thing is, it seems like the move to live has really affected his psyche for some reason. Like he's still in top 10 in leaderboards in live, so it's tough to say he's fallen off completely. It'll just be interesting to track his major season and where he does. But I think it's a great pick. If you're getting John Rahm around 20-1 to win a major, that's always smart money. It just is.
Okay. You want me to go with my contender?
Yeah, let's see your contender, and then we'll show our winners.
Okay. So I kind of created this category of not if, but when guys. And I think Ricky Fowler is like the prime example when like he was kind of young and emerging. It was like, it's not if he wins majors, it's when and how many, you know? And it's like, okay, well, now that take has aged, we kind of look back and say, well, maybe that was a little bit getting ahead of ourselves. So this is another kind of not if, but when guy. And I think the spotlight of that has faded and the pressure is a little bit off of him and he can kind of just go play his best golf. And his best golf is really good. Bunch of top 10s, T3 at the Masters, 35-1, Max Homa, not if, but when, and the when could be this week.
I love it. I mean, his form has been decent kind of all season. He's saying that he's not putting the ball very well, but he had a week where he didn't have his best and he finished top 10 at Quail Hollow, had that great week at the Masters. God, such a bad break on that round on Sunday where it trampolined off the green into the azaleas and he made a double, kind of taking him out of the real contention to win the tournament. But yeah, I mean, with three more majors coming up, it'll be really interesting to see. You know, he's coming off two consecutive top 10s in majors. He finished top 10 at the Open, which was his first top 10. So let's see if we can keep this streak going. If not this week, he might be an interesting pick for the U.S. Open. But yeah, I think it's a great pick. He's very consistent. He's got the self-belief. So yeah, especially at 35-1, again, a really, really juicy number. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to tell you who's going to win the PGA?
Please, I'd love to know.
It's Rory McIlroy. Oh. I don't know if I've ever picked him to win a major on this podcast. I probably have.
I'm sure.
It's crazy. I'm thinking the right way to put this. Picking Rory to win a major is tough because his odds are always going to be short, and they should be because he's one of the best golfers in the world. And I still say, despite what Scotty has shown, if Rory has his A-plus game, nobody in the world is going to beat him, even Scottie Scheffler.
That's crazy.
I don't think it is because okay. He showed it yesterday. He and Xander Schauffele were alone. And I know it wasn't a major, but it was still a big event. It was at the Wells Fargo Championship, Quail Hollow, a venue where the PGA Championship was held previously and going to be held next year, ironically. Xander Schauffele made an eagle on 7 to take a 2-shot lead over Rory. You know what happened after that, Nick? Rory played his next 8 holes 8 under par. 2 eagles in that stretch. Rory's A-plus game doesn't come out very often, but when it does, it is otherworldly. And because we just really haven't seen it since, frankly, 2014, it feels like he's underachieved despite having 26 PGA Tour wins and 4 majors. I know, but look, the guy hasn't won a major since he's been 25. So it is fair to criticize him for that. It is. That's a simple fact. The last time he won a major championship was at Valhalla, the venue that we're going back to. The last time he won a major championship, he won his previous 2 PGA Tour starts going into it, which he has now done this year. I think there's so much synchronicity. This is how you bust out of a slump. It's been a decade since he's won a major. I feel very confident that he is going to get it done this week at the PGA Championship.
I don't mind the pick, and I think you make a pretty good case. My problem is when you say that somebody's A-plus game hasn't been seen in 10 years, then is it really their A-plus game, or is it just like something cool they did 10 years ago? Because like it's almost like, oh, I made an ace one time. Like my A-plus game is like hitting it in the hole. And it's like, well, that's not sustainable. Like that was 10 years ago. Like that's yes. Not you anymore. So to say like if it's your A-plus game, it's like, no, that happens like 3 or 4 times a year at least, or like once a month. You know what I mean? Like if it's been, I agree. Rory's got afterburners like nobody else. Sure. And I think he's a really good pick to win. I like all those things you set up. So we'll see. I think it's a good pick.
Well, the reason I say his A-plus game is better than anybody else, we haven't seen it over the course of 72 holes at the level of a major championship since he was in his early 20s. But Nick, he won the U.S. Open by 8. He won the PGA Championship by 8. Like, these... that
10 years ago.
Longer ago. That was 2011 and 2012. It's a different ballgame. But I think that he is... It's not like he's not sniffing major championships. I mean, look at his major championship record. He has, I think, 11 top 10s since 2019 in major championships. Like, he's sniffing around. He has a second place last year. He finished second and third in 2022. Like, he is sniffing around leaderboards. It's just that Rory's floor is way lower than a Scottie Scheffler or a Jon Rahm. It just is. Rory missed the cut at the Masters last year. Like, Rory's floor is quite low. I just think his ceiling is higher than Scottie Scheffler's. I've always thought that. It's just that Scottie's floor and ceiling, you can barely see in between those two things. It's basically a really good putter or an average putter. Those are That's the difference. He hits the ball the same. But Rory, when he has his A-plus game, it's just a different thing to me. I know.
It would be fun to see. It would be. It'd be nice to talk about a recent major on Rory's resume.
It would. But anyway, that's not who's going to win, Nick. Tell me who's actually going to win.
Okay. This is the newest not if but when guy. And that's the title is a lot easier to shed when it's new, to you, when you're still naive. God, I'm going to butcher this. Ludvig Åberg.
Close.
19-1.
Close.
School me.
I've heard it most often said Ludvig Åberg.
Åberg. Okay.
Åberg.
Well, we'll over there. we'll all know how to pronounce it soon because he's going to win this major. And we'll all get that squared away. He is the hottest name in golf right now. The biggest up and comer. He's currently sixth in the OWGR. By the way, he finished second at the Masters, eighth at the Players, second at Pebble Beach. He can perform on big boy courses. It's time. You don't want to go too long with the not if, but when and how many. You just want to get that done, get that major under your belt, and take the pressure off and play golf. I think this is the week. I think he's the winner. I got about 19-1.
Yeah, I love the pick. If you pick Ludvig Åberg going into a tournament, you always feel good about your chances. Like, he rinsed one on 11. And he should have gotten like 45 in the back at that point. And he didn't. He actually kind of pushed Scottie a little bit on the back and hit really good shots down the stretch. So I love Ludvig. I think it's a really good pick. I'm looking at this list here, and I don't see Scottie Scheffler's name. We decided not to pick Scottie Scheffler in the PGA Championship. We're just going to not do that. Okay. It's really hard to win four
wrong?
Majors.
What could go wrong?
It's really hard to win four majors in a year. It's very, very difficult. So if it was Scotty versus the field, we've chosen the field. Yeah. Rory, here, let me do this. Rory, Brooks, Scotty, or the field?
The field.
Interesting. Okay. Well, those are our picks. Fade them or use them. That's who we're going for the PGA Championship. Nick, it is now time for the Matt Golfer of the Week. It's brought to you by Piper Golf. Use promo code TURN10 at checkout for incredible savings on incredible golf balls. By God, we're going to Valhalla Golf Club, site of this week's PGA Championship in Louisville, Kentucky. I forgot about this one. This one's so funny. Good. Quote, I stopped to buy a golf shirt and was promptly informed by the gent on duty that blue jeans were not allowed in their pro shop. So I let him know my next song lyrics would commemorate how I got kicked out of PGA's Valhalla Golf Club. Also, what I could see of the course was indeed beautiful.
Okay, so we got some poser country music center because I've never heard a song that references this. So clearly he has not made it, he or she. Walking into this famous golf course, not to play golf or book a tee time, but just to buy a shirt. So everybody recognizes that this person was on the grounds and is complaining about being asked to leave the grounds with those blue jeans. And I'm sure if I know my country music, there was a skull ring in the back of those blue jeans. There was some nice fresh dirt right on those jeans there. There was some holes in the knees. So I'm sure they want the fanciest, nicest blue jeans to be found. So poor guy or gal.
No, it's a guy. His name is Mike Kimbrough. I forgot to put his name.
I thought he was anonymous. I thought this person was remaining anonymous so they could just write a song about it and become famous that way. Well, I'll keep updating my Spotify and see if this comes to light. Was this review recent?
This review was 3 years ago. So, you would think at this point they've had enough time to release the music.
Can't rush greatness.
Congrats, Mike Kimbrough. You are the Mad Golfer of the Week. And with that, it is now time for Nick Rules, brought to you by Matchstick Golf. Use promo code TURN20 at checkout.
Well, there's one rule about the PGA Championship I think everybody should know, and that is the PGA Championship winner gets to hold on to the Wanamaker Trophy for 1 year. Then they return it for the next PGA Championship, for the next winner to take. No problems, unless you're Walter Hagen, who was a good player with a drinking problem. He won four PGA Championships in a row, beginning in 1924, and the trophy was mysteriously never seen for much of that run. Hagen showed up to the 1926 PGA Championship without the trophy. When asked, he said it was because he didn't plan on losing it. Which he didn't. He won. 1927, he pulled the same thing and won. 1928, however, he lost. It's time to hand over the trophy. And that's when he claimed that he lost the trophy in 1925 after a night out drinking.
Can I pause you real quick? Walter Hagen's plan was just to never lose the PGA Championship. As long as I keep winning the tournament, I never have to tell him what happened.
Yeah, as ridiculous as it sounds, it worked for 3 years. He didn't have to come clean until 1928. He had 1,000 days to think about what he was going to say. So after he came clean, the PGA made a duplicate Wanamaker trophy. And this is the one that the winner gets each year to this day. Then in 1930, 5 years after he lost it, 2 years after he came clean, the original Wanamaker trophy was found. Hagen claimed he lost it to a shady taxi driver, but the trophy was found in the basement of the golf club manufacturer that made his golf clubs.
So he stole the thing and lied about it?
Who knows what happened? Did he steal it? Did he lose it in a bet? Did he sell it? Did he? Who knows? Who knows? Did somebody associated with him steal it while he was blacked out? Who knows? The original trophy that was found in the basement of that Detroit golf club manufacturer workshop is now on display in the PGA Historical Center in Florida, and it is still engraved with the winner's name each year.
You know, shout out to Bruce McGill for his performance in The Legend of Bagger Vance as Walter Hagen. That performance is the one redeeming quality of that film. He really embodies what they describe in this story here. We need more Walter Hagens, less Justin Thomas's, more Walter Hagens. Modern day on the PGA Tour. Boy, they were having fun 100 years ago, weren't they, Nick?
Sounds like a great time.
And that is Nick Rules. All right, next week we are not going to talk about the PGA Championship at all. Tiger could win by 10 shots, and we're not going to mention it. That's because we're going to be talking to our dear friend Brian Romey, who would have at that point attempted to qualify for the United States Open Championship. Nick will be carrying his clubs and keeping his remarks to himself, unless a well-timed joke is needed. Nick, do you have any last-minute thoughts?
No. You know, I'm trying. I told you off-air I was trying not to overthink it, and I think that's abundantly clear that I'm definitely not overthinking it. Let me ask you this. Would you rather botch something by overthinking it or underthinking it?
Oh, underthinking it for sure, because then you have an alibi. If you overprepare for something and then you don't do it well, that stings a lot more than just being like, well, you know, I just was trying to kind of stay out of the way. And that's why I think people play golf well if they're not playing for a long time, because they're not thinking about it very much. They're just going out there and doing it. And I think you're taking the same approach to caddying. And look, if Romy shoots 66, you're going to feel so good about yourself. Like, I did exactly what I was supposed to. I stayed out of his way. He played great golf. He made 8 birdies.
Exactly. I think that's the biggest part of the job is to, like, do nothing. Typically, I'm the kind of person who would rather overthink things, because if things go wrong, at least you can say, like, I showed up prepared. I just didn't know what to expect. But if you're underprepared, you know, it's like, oh, like I could have controlled this and I didn't. So it's actually taking a lot of effort for me to underprepare.
I like this. I like this. Okay. Well, good luck to you. Especially good luck to Rome's. I'm very excited. I know it's going to be a great experience. Pumped to talk to him about it. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. Enjoy the PGA Championship. Good luck, Blocky. Make the cut, big fella.
I'm Lacey Evans. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time at The Turn.